times past and present, who have opened the doors of wisdom, reuniting all beings with their intrinsic purity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. The recitation of this rosary ever expands the awakening of faith in the three jewels, Bodhi, Dharma, and Sangha. Bodhi Saranam Gacchami, Dutyampi Tatyampi Savaha. I turn to the perfect nature of truth for peace. Again and yet again, may it be so. Dharmam Saranam Gacchami, Dutyampi Tatyampi Savaha. I turn to the teachings for guidance. Again and yet again, may it be so. Sangam Saranam Gacchami, Dutyampi Tatyampi Savaha. I turn to the holy order for guidance. Again and yet again, may it be so. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Dukkha, the noble truth of suffering. Dukkha Samudaya, the noble truth of the origin of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha, the noble truth of the extinction of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha Gamini Pratipada, the noble truth of the path that leads to the extinction of suffering. So long as these four noble truths are not understood, we shall wander in sorrow and ignorance. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. All formations are transient, Anicca. All formations are subject to suffering, Dukkha. All things are without a self, Anatta. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Namo Prajna Paramita Hirdaya, homage to the wisdom in the heart. Form is not different from emptiness. Emptiness is not different from form. This is the teaching of our spiritual ancestors, Gautama Buddha, and all the great teachers who have transmitted the Dharma to this holy day. Blessed is the knowledge of emptiness. Homage to the devotees of this and all paths of self-purification. May all find simplicity, the joyous and practical guide. The Dharma, being the contents of enlightenment, in which there is no bondage and no suffering, offers freedom from the cankers of ignorance and fear. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Sangha is the holy order of spiritual ancestors, monks, priests, and all those who follow and practice this path. Homage to the Sangha. Homage to all who are approaching this holy path. Homage to all who follow and establish this holy path. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. By compassionate comprehension that dissipates delusion, by compassionate aspiration that harms no one, by compassionate speech that makes for clarity, by compassionate self-discipline that brings no regret, by compassionate livelihood that brings no discredit, by compassionate endeavor that results in goodness, by compassionate mindfulness that proves this path, by compassionate awareness that leads to nirvana. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these three pure precepts. the precept of restraint and religious observances, for the precept of obedience to all good laws, for the precept to benefit all sentient beings. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these 10 great prohibitive precepts. Not to lead a harmful life, nor to encourage others to do so. Not to take that which is not given. Not to commit or participate in unchaste conduct. Not to tell lies nor practice believing the fantasies of authority. Not to use intoxicating drinks or narcotics, nor assist others to do so. Not to publish other people's faults. Not to extol oneself and slander others. Not to be avaricious in the soul of the teachings. Not to be angry. Not to speak ill of this religion or any other. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. In the practice of loving kindness, in the practice of pure attention, in the practice of ever expanding faith, in the practice of constant devotion, and in the practice of inquiry through correct dhyana. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. O happy blessed day, O happy blessed place, O happy blessed time, O happy blessed path, O happy blessed opportunity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Here in humble submission, in order to experience this most perfect now, I deeply vow and sacrifice all thoughts, all tensions, all pressures, and desires. I am born of karma. I am heir to karma. I abide in karma, and I am supported by karma. Whatever I do creates karma, and I shall surely experience this karma. The merit for all good acts I do freely offer to all beings. Dutiyampi tatiyampi saha. Again and yet again may it be so. Willingness is the name of the key to the gate of awakening. For even to awaken from deep sleep and face the new day, there must be the willingness to do it. Here in my hand is the opportunity, and the way is clear beyond the gate of thought and desire. There is no self and other, as the awareness of pure, undisturbed consciousness slips into all consciousness. suffering is not more important than anything. We will not end suffering. If I am suffering, it is because I am choosing something over ending suffering. We are not here to create and cling to beliefs. We are here to pay attention. We are here to use everything in our experience to see how we cause ourselves to suffer, so we can drop that and end suffering.
I'm looking at just a ton of things. Everything.
Just lots of everything.
Just lots of things. It's kind of just one of those times where when we pay attention to everything, it's helpful.
Mm-hmm.
You know? One of the things I've been looking at is the email class that we started on Friday. And so just that place of looking at that process of basically colluding with conditioned mind.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, some of the particular forms, like, you know, kind of hiding it, or, like, for example, you know, what wouldn't you talk about in group? Or what wouldn't you ask for guidance about? Or, you know, all those things that somehow, for some mysterious reason, stay behind the scenes. They don't get put out like everything else.
Yeah. There are certain things in life and practice that get tucked away,
mm-hmm.
that don't get to see the light of day in the areas that actually would be helpful to see them, perhaps, like in group or in guidance. And you're seeing that as a sort of a collusion with conditioning, and that the email class is shining a light on right now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it's one of those experiences where I keep having this insight. You know, I really see what's going on there and realize that's the exact same thing I reported like 10 minutes ago.
Uh-huh.
And like a half hour before that and yesterday. And so there must be something to it.
Uh-huh.
but it's something around, it feels like the reason that, one piece of it that's really clear is that when I turn and look squarely at those things,
uh-huh.
it feels like it goes in one of two directions. This is my experience. A lot of times those, I don't realize they're not being put out, say, sometimes.
Okay.
It's just not even there somehow.
Right. Right.
It's just the water I swim in or something.
Yeah.
But as soon as it occurs to me, what I notice is that one of two things happens. Either I put it out and realize, like with the systems of the response that I get back, there's nothing to it.
Mm-hmm.
It's completely fine. You know, there's just what? There's nothing to it.
Uh-huh.
So the only reason it was being kept hidden is so that there could be a possibility that it meant there's something wrong with it.
Uh-huh.
But it doesn't.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And then the second one is that in turning to look squarely at whatever it is, I get clear on what's going on there. And maybe get to a place for myself of, I don't actually want to do that.
I don't actually
want to do that. You know, so it's like, what I saw was, it feels like the reason, the whole process of collusion keeps in place a drama of there's something wrong.
Yeah.
And that either A, it's revealed there, well, there it's always revealed there isn't. So either on just even on the content level, that thing is completely fine. Or that as I look squarely at it, I realize it's not even me who wants to do that thing.
Yes.
I'm getting talked into that.
Yes. So the process of looking at it square on dissolves any lies or illusion about that thing itself. So it's clear that it's not you, number one.
Yeah.
And in that it's not you, there is just the innate knowing that there's nothing wrong.
Right.
It's sort of like, it's just that, yeah, that there's no confusion whatsoever that's me, so of course there's nothing wrong with me.
Right.
And then, it sounds like a kind of a cousin to that is, and I don't even want to do that. So
right.
The only charge that it ever had to begin with was in its secrecy or its hiddenness.
That was the only way the illusion of something wrong could be maintained.
Yes.
Yeah, because that kept it.
And that point that you said at the very beginning of that last piece, which is when it occurs to you to look at it, it feels like, to me anyway, that I project that's the key disidentifying moment.
Mm-hmm.
Because until it occurs to us to look at it, it's just like something that's in your pocket that you forgot was there. And it can be, uncomfortable. You can kind of sense that it's there, but you don't really, until you reach into what is this, we sort of collude by default until that moment.
I can't remember what context, maybe on the radio show or something, was talking about the image of a pebble in your shoe.
Yes,
But again, a subtle, something very, as you say, it's very subtle.
Uh-huh.
And that sense of like, you know what? My foot has been kind of hurting for a really long time.
Uh-huh.
Wait, why don't I just stop and take my shoe off?
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
And there's another, this is the subtle piece that's sort of somewhere right over here, that's something like, I've really been practicing with relaxing and receiving life, you could say. I mean, in particular, the life that I have and sort of all the, enjoying the fruits of practice and something along those lines. And just seeing how it's one of those places you wish there were different words, right? But seeing how life is living each of us perfectly, and it feels like that process of collusion is what covers that up.
Yeah, that's exactly the phrase that was arising for me. Well, no, not exactly. It was that it's ego's response to that, in an attempt to cover it up.
Ego's response to?
To receiving life, just that openness and well-being and kind of appreciation and gratitude and all of that. And then ego's got to do something to sort of try to cover that up.
Or to keep something out of that.
To keep something
to
out
keep
of
it. To keep it conditional.
Uh-huh.
Because it's like, first of all, that's a dangerous process for conditioned mind right there. To receive the life that you have and everything's unfolding perfectly, it's like,
where's the drama in that?
Where's the drama? Where's the problem? Where's the something not? So at least if we can have a few little tiny things that are not maybe there's something wrong with them, maybe there's not, but we're not really sure.
Yeah.
We'll just keep them over here and someday, sometime,
we'll
look at those. But you can sense there's that little rub, and that little, because if there were the attitude of mind of put it all out there, as soon as it comes to consciousness, put it all out there. I mean, that is unbelievable freedom. Because all of it is life unfolding perfectly. And the thing about it is that it's not as if suddenly, I mean, I'm sure there's trillions of things that are still underneath my awareness that I'm not seeing. But if there's the trust in that process, both the trust in life is unfolding perfectly, I am life, I'm not doing anything, I don't need to do anything about it, there's nothing wrong, and complete trust that as soon as something comes to awareness, where my heart is, kind of the team I'm playing for, is great, put it out and ask about it, then even though there may be 100,000 things underneath, you know, the level of awareness, I don't have to worry about those either.
Mm-hmm.
Because they don't, there's not a drag of like, oh, something bad is back there, and if I find that out, no, there isn't.
Yeah.
There's nothing. And as soon as I become aware of it, I'll put it out. And it will just be part of that life unfolding perfectly process.
Yeah, yeah. So see, this is what the process you're describing is similar to this, is that in that process of just putting it out there, what you're in essence doing or becoming.
The process you're participating in.
Yeah. Is becoming realizing the no self.
Yeah.
Because there's no, in a like if we could make ourselves transparent, and there's no real self here, just this sort of energy that we call us.
A bunch of molecules coming together.
The process, like the whirlpool in the water that Alan Watts describes, right?
Yeah.
There's nowhere to hide anything.
Yeah.
There's, it would just sort of swirl around and flow out and put it out and flow out and put it in the flow out. And that's just the process that is this human being when that original process that you're describing is happening of just, I'm just no self.
It's not taking the karma personally, all the stuff that's in here, and it's not taking the process of relief of bringing it to the level of awareness and releasing it personally either.
Right.
All of it's just that kind of life process of discovering itself.
Yeah. And in that way, I mean, I don't know, this is just occurring to me, so I don't know if it's really true or not, but in that way, it's like karma isn't a problem at all.
Exactly.
It's just part of the stream of the whirlpool. It's really just what's flowing through.
It's the answer, that old Zen story about the enlightened master does not avoid karma. I can't remember the whole story, but that's the punchline.
I don't know the story either, but I like the punchline.
That sense of like, well, you got to conquer karma, you got to get over it, you got to stop it. Because that's a karmic process.
Precisely. So much more fun and relaxing, isn't it, to just be the moving whirlpool rather than the what's pulling against the wheel of karma. That's hard, right?
Yeah.
Thank you. Jim?
It's uncanny. This morning something came up and I had a very similar realization. And it was, and I hadn't seen the email from Friday, the email class, but it was kind of this collusion thing. Trying to talk about that, getting into too much content, but there was something at the Hermitage, and so I tried to fix it, and there's a little kind of a glitch, and there was this kind of split second, I guess I should back up just a little bit. Like, it's, of course, very supportive and kind of just being here, not even for a full day, to see that there is a process in mindfulness that's been brought to, almost every aspect. Kind of thinking about that, there hasn't been an aspect that mindfulness has been brought to that's okay. This was something that, that I brought up, and there was just a little glitch, and there was just this split second moment of, just like, let's encrypt that and push it away. It was kind of like a not perfectly skillful way to do something that kind of hasn't been done before.
Uh-huh.
And it was like, well, I kind of have to do this thing, and there's not a precedent for it, and I'm not really sure how to do it, so it's therefore, since I don't know how to do it, as opposed to bring it to the guest master, say, hey, here's what I'm thinking about, here's what I'm looking at. And that way, just this almost logistics of living becomes a practice opportunity.
Yeah.
And after I did bring it up, you know, the question was posed, you know, well, does that do damage to this thing? And I was like, oh, oh, and I was like, oh my gosh, it, you know, at the time it did do a little bit, and I didn't even think about it. I just, there was this collusion that just was like, huh, just like push that aside, like, stick that in your pocket, because don't know how to deal with that, as opposed to, and it was similar, but it had a little, maybe a bit of a different flavor in that, the person there didn't know everything.
Didn't have all the information.
Exactly. And so that became an excuse to, well, let's cover up something.
Yes. And so it sounds like that process is, well, in my experience anyway, that process is what maintains that little small self. This illusion of a little small self. Okay, since I don't have all the information, I can, and in this place, a place like this, we're offered the opportunity to turn to life, which is represented by the monastery. So I can turn to the guest master, I can write a note, I can ask for guidance. Or what conditioning has us do, and what most of us have been trained our whole lives to do, is to turn to it, conditioned mind, to try to figure it out on our own. And it's the on our own we got to put in quotes, because that's what maintains this illusion of a small, separate little self that's got to try to do this. And so what you're describing is that fundamental choice point that we all have when we come to practice, to turn to do what we were just, that process that we were just describing of just turning everything over to life and seeing what happens, or choosing to reinforce that collusion kind of type relationship with small mind and keep doing that pattern of the quote figuring it out on our own.
And it wasn't until I did sort of bring it out into the open that I realized that, wait a minute, there was a little thing that happened that I was unconscious that happened, a little tiny conversation that happened, and it was, well, let me check in with conditioned mind, and conditioned mind's response was, well, it's acceptable to just essentially encrypt this, or to go unconscious about this, or to, you know, sweep it under the table, or to stick it in your pocket, and I didn't even realized that that was a process that was going on, like, let me check in, yeah, we're going to cover this up. And then I kind of realized, wow, at home, that happens all the time. Like, I don't know, man, let's just not apply awareness and mindfulness to this situation and just move on to what's next.
Yeah. And it does, I think, need to be underlined that it was brought out. You know, so yes, in the bringing it out and bringing it to guide us, it shone the light on the process that had been going on, but wasn't in that moment.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, and so it's so helpful to see that, when we see that, you know, when we see one example of that, it can feel so familiar and say, gosh, I do that a lot in my life. That can be so helpful to see. But just being careful not to get then sucked back into that, gosh, I do that. That's just what I do. Because it actually wasn't what you were doing in that moment. So do you see sort of the razor's edge point that I'm kind of pointing to? That it's easy to re-identify with that process rather than see, kind of get current and say, well, this is the process I chose.
Well, when I was first looking at the email class assignment, I thought, well, I don't know. I feel pretty open about the things that are going on with me in terms of conditioning, and I'm not sure that I'm colluding in any particular way. But as I did my recording and listening about it, what came up was that the conditioning allows me to turn my attention to the conditioned processes when they're at their worst, but it says, well, you can look at it here. Here's where it's happening. You can look at it in order to keep me from seeing that it actually happens 24/7. Uh-huh. You know, so the colluding was with me not knowing how pervasive, it's like the pebble in the shoe. It's like, okay, we're looking at the rocks, and everybody knows what my rocks are. I'm not hiding my rocks. Uh-huh. But I've got all these little pebbles that, well, they're not so bad, so I don't really have to look at them. Well, don't even notice them.
Are you aware of the little pebbles, and then they just come to...
Only now that I brought my attention to it. It's like, oh, okay, that process goes on here and here and here. No, wait, that process goes on all the time.
Everywhere. So is it that in your reporting you saw that while you're really clear on the big rocks, and there's something, you don't hide those at all because you're very clear on them, there was a hiddenness about the little pebbles from even you.
Right.
So it's not that you see there are these little pebbles and you're not going to bring them out. It's more that you were even unaware of them until you did the exercise. Yeah. And then you saw kind of pebbles everywhere.
Pebbles everywhere. Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, it's like conditioning was allowing me to direct my attention to the things it was allowing me to direct my attention to.
Conditioning was allowing you to direct your attention to the things that it was allowing you.
Yeah, so it would say, okay, you can look at this. You can look at this process and try and see through this so that you will not see how this other stuff goes on. And so... So I mean, it just made me realize more how important it is to direct the attention all the time. Because I was so focused on the problem areas that there were a lot of other times during the day where it didn't feel like a problem. And I wasn't there because I was thinking this is not so bad. But it's going on.
So,
it's going on.
So what's occurring to me is that if the conditioning is allowing you to turn your attention to this or that, but not that, then it seems to me that the place to move the attention from is having conditioning be the one directing where your attention is.
Right. You know, I would never have said before that it was allowing me to turn my attention there. You know, what it looked like was, okay, here are these things that still catch me. I'm going to turn all my attention to those so that I can get beyond those.
Okay.
And so great. I mean, apparently that was fine with the program. So, okay, go ahead, look at those.
Well, because you'd already seen them.
Right, because you've already seen them. So,
it's like giving you the territory you already won.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's right.
You already captured that.
But do not notice that the conversation that is going on 90% of the time is a suffering conversation.
Yeah. And so what you're seeing is that to turn the attention to basically what is not being noticed instead of what you already have noticed.
Well, yeah, and to turn my attention here. I mean, basically just not have it so focused on, okay, I'm working on these big processes.
Yeah.
Actually, but what's going on right now?
Yeah. Yes, well, it does always come down to that, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So in a manner of speaking, to kind of stop and say, okay, what is going on right now? Let me check in. And then you can watch probably that big tug come in of, what about these rocks? Well, what about this rock? What about, but what's going on right now?
Right.
And keep coming back to that. Because it sounds like maybe that's an alluring attempt.
Yeah. Yeah. And when I like do that, I see that what's going on right now is often that same process that I was looking at. But there are different versions of it. There's the version that comes with the dramatic sensations that are hard to miss, and those are the ones where the attention goes. But you know, in any given moment, there's a smaller version of that same story going on that almost flies under the radar because it doesn't have such fireworks associated with it.
And are those the ones you're wanting to kind of look at more closely?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, those are the ones I'm just grateful that I noticed are happening.
Yeah.
I mean, because they just felt like life.
Yeah.
That's what it is to be this person. That's what life is like. And
So you're training and practicing to look at the more subtle sensations, the subtleties of what's going on, instead of the big in your face kind of things that you look at a lot.
Right. And also just looking at that, directing the attention where I would like to have it go rather than where it wants me to have it go.
Yeah.
Because it wants me to stay in that something wrong conversation all the time.
Yeah.
Because that's its power.
Yeah. It's a vapor
Really, I mean, but, you know, to the extent that it has any, it's keeping me in that conversation.
Yeah.
And if I don't see that I'm in that conversation, then it does, in a way, have a lot of power.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, along the same thing, and I'm probably going to just say another version of what a lot of people have said, but what I saw was that the motivation for colluding with ego is not even knowing it's ego, thinking it's me. And as a separate me, believing that I need acceptance and love from others, and I will only get that if I'm a certain kind of person, not the person that has those ego things going on, you know? And so nobody gets to see those.
There's this story that I believes mm-hmm. that I have to be a certain kind of person,
mm-hmm.
and that certain kind of person then needs this love, mm-hmm. and that's the
or
way
acceptance, she's... approval, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. I mean, even the keep job, you know, the mm-hmm. just be a certain way.
To be an okay, acceptable human being.
Yeah.
And the way to do that is to not reveal all this other stuff so it gets hidden behind.
Yeah. And the key part of that I saw in looking at this is that in doing that, in hiding that stuff, believing that it's me, it reinforces the truth of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, by hiding it in that way, it reinforces
my belief that it's true.
Because if you didn't believe it, then there'd be no reason to hide it.
Right. And if I exposed it, there would be no reason to hide it because it isn't hidden. It's out.
And because if you exposed it, it would eradicate that belief.
Right. Okay. Right. Right.
Yeah.
And what the other really beautiful thing that was a part of seeing that is seeing that I don't really believe that anymore. I feel like I don't need to be a certain way to get people's approval. I mean, it never worked anyway, you know. So I'm more interested in being here and just be having my own approval now. And so it's less attractive and less, I could just see that now that I have seen that that's what I was doing, the habit has been established. But I don't need to do that anymore. Because I don't really need the motivation that was there compelling that kind of fear of exposure is not really the same as it was.
It doesn't even really exist anymore, does it?
No.
It's just an old habit. It sort of just lingers.
It does. It does when ego gets a hook into me and I, you know, get into believing it again. I mean, it's not like it just poofed and it's gone. But it's not there as much because it's not getting its hooks in that same kind of way, and that really hideous self-hate around it is no longer there, really. I don't have that one. But I should have said that out loud, probably come around the corner now.
Might we say that when the authentic Cameron shows up,
yeah,
who doesn't really ever, doesn't believe that,
right,
doesn't need those external whatever, she outgrew those years ago, you know, those fell away years ago and all that, that when the authentic Cameron is there, then all of that other stuff goes away. And when she isn't there and ego is there and the illusion of the the identity is there, that's when it feels real.
Yeah, yeah, and it still does that when ego pops up and it hooks somebody who has a vulnerability to a particular line that's current, you know, something that's happening, and there can be a, you know, a yeah, but it's just so interesting how all those little pieces kind of fit together to lock in that program of colluding,
uh-huh.
basically.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's all the little beliefs.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of like all this big gear goes and locks it in, you know, and so then that's
a mechanism that safeguards, that hides the wizard behind the curtain.
Yeah. And that's what practice does, is allows us to pull back that curtain mm-hmm. and disengage the gears mm-hmm. and practice just exposing it.
Yeah.
And then you see that poor little weak old man mm-hmm. trying to keep all that equipment running back there, and all the smoke's coming out, and poor dear. Kind of pathetic.
Yeah, until you see the mountain of bodies and lives that they've stolen.
Yeah.
So sympathetic.
No, it's not something to engage in a in that way, but to break down the fearful image that it has before the curtain is pulled is
pathetic is a word that comes to mind.
Yeah. Yeah, and the thing that it doesn't really have any power to do anything but to scare you mm-hmm. with lies. Mm-hmm. So that's only the very first day of the retreat in the email class.
Yeah, what more lies ahead?
Really?
Thank you. That's Renee.
Ego doesn't like this conversation.
Really? Is it feeling a bit exposed?
It's trying to get me not to talk, so I had to talk.
Yeah,
I was just saying it's really, really helpful. Seeing the places that, and I don't even know how to put it in words, or maybe it's been said, and this is just a different way that I'm seeing it, I don't know. But the places that it won't let me look, or it keeps hidden from the awareness. So those places where I get sensitive to see something, do you know what I mean? When I'm identified with it and it comes up and I get defensive, uh-huh. or I get, I don't know the right word.
And so let me reflect that then. So you're seeing that there are these areas that we have a metaphorical off-limits sign on it, that ego does not want us to see. You know, don't shine any light of awareness on that. And the way that it blocks it out, we might say, is a feeling of defensiveness. It maybe brings up the emotion. Mm-hmm. You know, you get that sense of it doesn't like this. Mm-hmm. You know, that is, you know, those things that come down across railroad tracks, you know, ding, 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 ding. No, don't cross here. You know, so is that what you're pointing to? And when you say ego doesn't let me look at it, that's the process?
When I'm identified with it and it's pointed out, possibly by life or other people or whatever, somehow it's coming back at me and is mirrored mm-hmm. towards me, and then I won't receive it. You know, it's like, no, you're wrong. No, you know, no, I didn't do that. No, whatever, you know, just always no, basically. Mm-hmm. That's not something I can look at, and it's a body feeling, kind of like a irritation or defensiveness or.
And can I ask you a question about that?
Mm-hmm.
So what if you are receiving it in that moment, and all of that big body sensation that is interpreted as no is just something that happens that's not you, but you really are receiving. You're seeing it. Mm-hmm. What then?
Mm-hmm. there's something going on, but I don't know what it is when you said that. I could be receiving it yet. I'm not aware of it yet. Or, you know, there's not a level of consciousness to talk about it.
And I'll just point out, except like right now, except you are mm-hmm. talking about it.
Yeah, and I think the conversation has helped, and the mm-hmm. email class has helped to look at that. So it's kind of like, when we first start coming to the monastery, it's like practice is here and it's not out there.
Uh-huh.
And then it starts to go out there, you know, start uh-huh. to practice out there. And then yeah. it's like it's finding all these little places. Yeah. And there's still these places that are hidden.
Yeah.
Or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's a really good metaphor. So it's like there are still these little dark corners that the light of awareness isn't like shining directly on. But that doesn't mean that doesn't mean anything about the light of awareness. In other words, the light is just fine. The light is bright, it's shining, it's getting all this. And we are that sort of the practitioner who's going through helping to shine that light that is us, in a sense, on all these areas. And what we experience along the way is when we know we're getting near one of those dark corners of the cave, we know we get these feelings, these body sensations, we get this, no, we get a tight throat, we get a whatever, anything that means don't go here.
Yeah.
And what we're seeing through the benefits of Sangha, the conversation, and the class, and everything, is that we find within ourselves the willingness to shine that light of awareness on that place. And we see in that process that, we're not that dark, scared, feeling. That's not really who we are. We're the one that's practicing and being bringing awareness to it. That's who we really are.
It's I think it's when I take something personal
uh-huh.
is when it's a darker place, you know, a place that doesn't have a light on it yet.
That's a really good clue, isn't it? Because there's something that I feel like is really about me.
Mm-hmm.
Ding, ding, that's my clue. There's a darkness. There's a dark corner right there that's not real. And then we can just sort of watch. I wonder how the light's going to be shown on that. You know, how's the light calling that to come into my awareness? Well, because it just did. Okay, you know, and just sort of, you know, we don't have to make anything happen.
We just get to see that. Yeah, that ego makes something wrong with that.
Yeah.
When there's not anything wrong with
there's
it.
Nothing, nothing wrong.
That's just where I am on the path.
And that's just what it is doing mm-hmm. on that, you know, that moment in time on the path. And you're,
So exposing it is like ego doesn't want you to do that because that means that there's something wrong with you, and because you haven't seen that yet.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, you haven't.
You're just now getting that?
You should be further along than that. Or, uh-huh. You know, so it does keep, like sitting here, I was watching self-hate, you know, not want to, onto me saying they're going to be irritated with you, whatever you say, and, you know, or no one wants to hear it. Or, and so it's like I'm sitting there going, wait a minute, that's self-hate. Like, you know, it's like there, like people are talking about, it's like there. Like it's in the background.
And it just doesn't jive with your actual experience, does it?
Or the experience of other people talking. I love it when other people talk. I hear what they say. So it's like not true. It's like there under the radar.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
You know, that consciousness, that to be able to see it. And so when you see it, it's like a huge amount of energy. You know, surges.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's totally there, released and able to be experienced.
Yeah.
It's just the best.
It is. So this is first class. It's great.
Conditioning better.
Yeah, I'm trying now. Trying to anyway. Not succeeding.
What I was looking at with the class was what the mentor said to me was, when I was talking to the mentor about the collusion, was the real problem with the collusion is that every collusion creates an I. Mm-hmm. And that's how I gets created. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's not, in a sense, it's not that the, it's not even that, since the content of what you're doing is a problem, it's that I keeps getting reinforced. And that was just helpful to see, because I've been looking at sort of individual instances of. So that was one of the most helpful things to me about the assignment.
That the content of the particular instance isn't even, okay, well, I kind of colluded there, and then I kind of do that there, and then maybe I kind of, but that was not even as fundamental as seeing that, oh, that very process reinforces an I.
Creates an I. Reinforces an I, yeah. Yeah, because I can stay being an I, searching for these things that I'm supposed to get because there's an assignment to get them.
Yeah.
I'm a good student, and I, you know. Uh-huh. And so that was really helpful to see. And one of the things I was seeing for myself is that, or one of the things that became I became aware of, was that I can get seduced is when there are certain scenarios I play out in which I am the star. And they're really attractive, mm-hmm. and fun and feel good. Mm-hmm. And so, and I tend to go along with them. I can catch them doing it. I know what it is. I know this is not helpful. And I go along because it feels good. Mm-hmm. And so it was just helpful to sort of be called on that, mm-hmm. you know, because it happens and it sort of fades away and I forget about it. Then it happens again and it fades away and I forget about it. So having to do this assignment where we actually say, yeah, that is collusion actually, I also found very helpful.
Yeah, it's so tempting, isn't it? Those areas that have a rush, a sort of a rush, or they mm-hmm. feel good in some way, you know, sort of like it was reminded me as you were saying this, like, yeah, eating brownies really felt good for, you know, a long time too. My whole sugar thing, and then you realize the cost that it's, you know, the toll it's taking, and then it's sort of one of those kind of good poignant moments when you realize.
Well, yeah, as I'm listening and looking at my own experience, I was thinking about one of the kindnesses of practice is that it's a gradual, for me anyway, and I suspect for many of us, it's a gradual process. Mm-hmm. You know, there's some Emily Dickinson Transform Your Life quote about something about if everything were revealed, the whole world would go blind. Mm. And so what gradually happens in my experience over time is that the reward in that diminishes. Mm-hmm. It just isn't, it doesn't have the draw that it did. And it doesn't usually diminish when I decide, by God, I'm going to stop doing that. It just diminishes. Mm-hmm. And then at some point, the attractiveness is gone, and because being here has become more attractive, and then there's the next thing, and then the next thing, and you know, as was said early on, that the timing, I don't have to worry about the timing. You know, it'll happen if I'm paying attention. It'll happen, and as long as I don't get into that other collusion of self-hate, you know, so I can get drawn in colluding, and then I can get drawn into colluding, being thinking how awful it is that I can collude it. It's all collusion. Mm-hmm. If I don't get drawn into that, then that's just the next thing to see. Mm-hmm. And probably I'll live with it for a while, and gradually it will lose its attractiveness too. And for me, that's the process.
Yeah. Yeah, because any other kind of hurrying along or thinking there's somewhere to get is really just another creation of a self that is doing that.
Yeah.
And so it's sort of like the sword, wear the sword just as long as you can.
Exactly.
And that it will, as long as we're practicing, you know, it's not like I'm going to just twiddle my thumbs and daydream and
right.
it'll happen,
right.
but as long as we're practicing, then we're really all on life's time.
Yeah.
Because that's who we are.
Yeah. Sherry has often said, of herself, I've never let anything go, but no. many things have fallen away.
Yeah,
I think that's what she's pointing to.
Yeah, I've never given up anything.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Such a relaxing way to live.
Justin. One of the ways I'm looking at this is giving up control. Uh-huh. And it's really the same thing everybody said, but you know, that's what that conclusion is. I'm staking a, putting a stake in the ground here, my ground line, so nobody crosses this line. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, to see it from outside of it, see it from inside of it, it makes complete sense. You know, this is, you know, this is my life, this is what I want to do, all this kind of stuff. To see it from outside of it, it's really, it doesn't make any sense at all. Because, you know, the world that's being, you know, the control is basically, I'm going to keep everybody out so that I can have this space to be in that's sort of mine. And everything, you know, what's in that space is everything I don't want. You know, it's you know, isolation and self-hate is in that space. And, you know, there's this quote kind of getting what I want in quotes, but it's not what I really want, actually. It's just this stuff as a compensation for what I really want. Mm-hmm. And all on and on and on and on. Mm-hmm. You know, it's, there's a lack of peace. There's not a connection. So it just doesn't make any sense. But that's kind of the karma, is just to keep that for me, for me. And somehow that is going to be a big thing. That's what I want.
Mm-hmm. So the way you're working with this and the way you're looking at it is to look at this karmic thing that happens where you create this space around yourself, and it supposedly keeps out everything that you don't want and keeps in everything you do want. But what you're finding is that what's in is really just a cheap imitation of what you really want. Like, it says it's peace, but it's not peace, it's self-hate. It says it's you know, whatever, it's isolation and all that. And so it's not at all what you really want.
Yeah, that's interesting the way you said that. Keeping in everything I want, keeping out everything I don't want, that's the way it's presented for sure. I think the reality is it's the opposite. I think it's keeping out everything I want.
Yeah.
And keeping in everything I don't want.
And it's the illusion of control that is keeping that whole process in place.
Yeah, like other people said, you know, there's an I.
Yeah.
You know, that actually is what the I wants.
Yeah.
Definitely what the I wants.
It is keeping everything in that the I wants.
For sure. Yeah. You know, oh, good. I get to be separate, and I get to be in charge. You know, and I get to, you know, supposedly, yeah, I get to have what I want, which, you know, which is, it's all of that. It's all that angst and drama and unhappiness and everything. That's what the eye wants.
Yeah.
And what I want is not what's there. It's what's available outside of that little bubble. Uh-huh. But there is a karmic tendency to be in the bubble, and that's what the training is.
Yeah, yeah. There's the karmic tendency to be the eye that wants all this stuff. Mm-hmm. And what the training is to realize that you're a quote I that wants everything that's outside of that.
Yeah, and specifically, you said a minute ago, the other way of working with it, specifically what I've realized, that kind of revelation, I mean, this is the most fundamental thing in practice. I think I just got it, which is it's all happening in a conversation. Mm-hmm. All of that is just happening in words in the mind. Mm-hmm. And without that, none of it is going on.
Yeah.
And it's so, I mean, it really is fundamental, but it's just completely revolutionary. Because it gives me a really tangible way to work with it. Otherwise, it's kind of theoretical. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, I can see that, yeah, and I'm just continuing to do the same thing because I don't see a way to actually make a difference. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just the karma rolls through, and I believe it, and that goes on and on and on. But to get that, it's just a conversation with conditioning.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I can just direct my attention to what I want instead. You know, everything that's out there, so I can call it anything, but, you know, love, peace, joy, gratitude, you know, all that kind of stuff, connection. I can just put my attention on that, and the whole thing just goes poof.
Yeah.
And it just goes away, and it's not there. There is no issue anymore.
Yeah. The key practice. So, To get it out of the world of, I understand this theory, I understand, I see the model, I see how it works, yeah, so what? You know, we just kind of keep getting rolled over, it rolls over us again and again and again when we're in that mode. But when you see that there's an actual tangible thing that you can do, a path to stop that karmic pattern, which is to get out of the conversation and redirect your attention to what your heart wants instead, then it takes it out of the theoretical realm and puts it in really squarely into, okay, this is just fundamental, profound, real life practice.
Mm-hmm. And it's something I can do.
Yeah.
You know, when I say that, it just, without that, without the practice of it, I can't do it.
Yeah, because without the practice of it, there's nowhere to go but the head. Because that's where theories and everything lives, mm-hmm. there, the conversation.
Yeah, I'm really grateful for that, too, because there's been, you know, it's just kind of been the same thing with cycling through for a really long time. And it feels like there's a way, I can see a way to change that. Mm-hmm. I'm really excited about it. And, you know, I really kind of got that suddenly last week. And then there was a period of time where it's just, my teaching was just super focused. And I have a breath and meditation and all that. And now it's funny because it's over the last, 24 hours, it's kind of, there's this kind of fuzzy thing going on again. And anyway, it's just fascinating. So I think, you know, wow. I'm just going to keep plugging away. And at some point, I've got to go poof and disappear and I'll see something about that. But it's just fascinating that I have the information. But it's like this quicksand or something. Uh-huh. It's just this raw back uh-huh. into it. I can't actually see the conversation really that's going on. I know there's a conversation going on. Uh-huh. I can barely kind of see it, but I'm just kind of in it.
When that happens to me, actually, in my own mind, I call that sort of the surfer's wipeout time, you know, when you're just kind of underwater and you're like, okay, I know I'm going to pop up here in a minute and, you know, uh-huh. and get back on the board. It's just, you just kind of
weird
it out until it kind of comes
through. Sure, I am really grateful for that information. I think it's a habit. You know, and there's this pull, this big emotional and everything else pulled into that habit.
Yeah.
The habit of being that separate self and being in control. Yeah. And, And like other people, somebody else said, you know, it's gradual. And, but it also was like this, you know, it's up and down.
Uh-huh.
So that's kind of comforting too. Just, yeah. You know, it's just.
Back on
life's time. Yeah, that was really helpful. But to know also that what's required is my active participation. Mm-hmm. You know, I really need to redirect it. Because even when it's fuzzy.
To do.
Exactly. Yeah. It's fuzzy like this. That's okay. I'm just, maybe.
That's right.
Doesn't look as good as it did 2 days ago.
Yeah.
But that's all right. I'm just going to keep doing the same process. And then after a while, it'll give. And then, I've seen that's happened.
I think it does.
That last conversation was it, actually. That's excellent. That's exactly how I was seeing it, was that essentially the collusion, any time I'm in a conversation, every time there's a conversation, it's collusion. Mm-hmm. Full stop.
Yeah, no exceptions, right?
No exception. That's the whole deal right there. And so the way that I was looking at it and the way that practice has been arising around that was there is a conversation, not condition type of conversation. Somebody was speaking in group and talking about, you know, all of the attention of the looking process always is around kind of when everything comes to a head. And that what really, it's the buildup to, it's like what gets to the point. You know, so here's the process. But it's what leads to the process.
The pre-process.
The pre-process, exactly. And so to me, I really was fascinated by that. And I think that it has everything to do with collusion. Mm-hmm. Because the pre-process seems like it's these kind of momentary little collusions through, essentially, conversations. Either unconscious ones or conscious ones that just feel so me or so kind of unquestioned. That ultimately they lead up to the process. And so, and it feels like what happens, part of the collusion is, I'm always being directed to look at the process. And so I never see these kind of conversations, which is the essence of the collusion, that is getting me back into the karma every time. So it's like so awareness practice then becomes a constant looking at, you know, such and such process over and over again in all these different ways, and yet it kind of misses the entire point, that the actual buildup, and this is kind of what was being said in that conversation, at least what I took from it, is actually happening beforehand in what I would call either the relaxation or the checkout times, mm-hmm. where, you know, I said something and then I can relax. I did something, I can relax. Mm-hmm. You know, whatever it is. And what I was seeing with it was, on a very, very finite level, is that when watching what the mind is doing, it's always coming to a it's trying to seek a resolution. So, you know, so essentially what I was seeing was a thought will come through, and kind of there's the karmic thought. And then there's a choice point right there to either just see it and kind of turn back to the silence. Or it can, if attention is turned to it, it then turns into the conversation. And the way the conditioning deals with that, it feels like part of the collusion is, once it turns into a conversation, instead of just dropping it, no matter where a conversation is, to come back to the moment, instead, the way conditioning deals with it is it resolves the conversation. Either it's going to go, but you know, something's wrong, or, yeah, okay, I get it. So it's actually resolving it until the next one starts. Until the next one starts. And in the resolving of it, there's still never a movement back into the this here now, the presence, the silence. So it's an entire internal thing that's going on. Mm-hmm. You know, that addiction people talk about. And just watching how the mind, the conditioned mind, is kind of self-perpetuating itself under the illusion that I see that, you know, I get that now. Oh, I see where that was going. Or the other side of that, which is, you know, something to be afraid of, something's wrong, something to worry about. But it's all happening in kind of what I would call resolution, which is just another conversation. So it's like sub-conversation to sub-conversation. It's just, and so it's just
the antithesis of this here now.
Exactly, exactly. So it's just was being spoken of. The powerful practice and the very threatening and terrifying practice for conditioning is quite literally, you know, something the guide has said forever, saying that awareness practice seems like actually is, which is moment by moment, just coming back to that silence, you know, coming back to this particular moment. And in that way, it's like everything is revealed. It's so interesting. It's like the koan of, you know, how can one turn to silence and still be looking?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and in my experience, everything it's in that field, when the attention is on that field of awareness, and things just sort of pop, you know, sort of like the image of that comes to mind, like fireflies, they just lighten up and then they go out. And I don't really go out. You know, it really is, actually. It's a good metaphor now. So it's like trying to catch up and put it in a jar and just want to keep that and think that you've really gotten something, like you've gotten the light because you've kind of followed it and you hold it now and you're looking and you're really, you know, it's like, but no, I really want to be with light. Well, that's not being with light.
That's exactly it. Yeah. That's exactly it. Exactly. So it either wants, you know, kind of the process, you know, we look at the process right around that. But then there's that collusion that you just laid out. Well, that's exactly what I was saying, was that, you know, even recording and listening is the absolute tool of conditioning if given over to that process. Because it just, you know, oh yeah, I'm going back to, oh, I'm seeing that, that's right, I saw it. And immediately a conversation starts up again about it. Yeah. Or, you know, I'm feeling really good. Yeah. You know, whatever it is, and it will just take it and siphon it right back into another conversation about feeling good,
yeah,
or being grateful, yeah, or whatever that is.
Yeah. Boy, that, you know, to me anyway, that's a really important big thing to catch, that's happening. Because then we can begin to train our attention away from that thread that, you know, that leads to nowhere. Mm-hmm. You know, we can begin to withdraw our attention from that once we see that that's what, that it really doesn't lead, that we want to be.
Yeah, and we actually, what I was saying with it is, we actually don't even need to see that it doesn't lead anywhere. You know, it's that trust that in the silence, like in this moment, you know, so that's, for me at least, maybe this isn't what you're saying, but for me at least, that is part of the trap of well, if I can just see it, then I can come back to this moment. Mm. That's part of the resolution seeking. So there's this like a doing or an urge to try and get it or see it. Mm-hmm. And once I do, kind of that if and then thing that somebody was working on, mm-hmm. you know, if I see it, then I can come back to this moment. Mm-hmm. And so that, to me, is the breaking of the circuit. Mm-hmm. It's the trust that says, no, I don't want to, as soon as I become aware that there's a little conversation or a process going on, something going on, instead of staying with the trying to see what that is, that's the point.
That's the moment to drop it.
That's the moment to drop it, exactly. That seems like it's that little,
right
then, that place.
Yeah, good practice there, huh?
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you all.